debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And to open our show, on the line with us, our old friend, Senator Sherrod Brown, brilliantly representing the state of Ohio. Brown.senate.gov is the website. You can tweet him at Sen, S-E-N as in Senator, Sen Sherrod Brown, S-H-E-R-R-O-D Brown. Senator Brown, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. Good to be back. And thank you always for your analysis. I just thought what you said about the influence on climate change, you know, the Republican Party changed. I mean, they were never great, but they were pretty good on climate change a decade ago. And there was, you know, there was not agreement of human cause, but there was a lot of different discussions and different positions in the party. And the Koch brothers basically changed that, as they've done on the tax bill. I mean, you hear these stories on the tax bill that Republicans are calling their contributors and their big contributors, the gazillionaires, the decamillionaires, it up, and they're saying, don't call me for money again unless you pass my tax bill. And that's why they're doing it, and that's why they're writing it the way they are. You know, 62% of the 62% of the benefits from this tax bill go to the richest 1%, and even the Bush tax cuts, which you and I have talked about in the past, Tom, it was only 27% went to the super rich. So this is just outrageous, as you know.
Yeah, it truly is. I'm trying to make a new term enter our lexicon: the morbidly rich. Because I think that we have a serious problem in this country.
It. Morbidly rich.
Yeah,
that is
it,
good.
It's metastasized. It's amazing. But the not only is the tax plan an abomination, but the Republicans are up to their old tricks in terms of trying to screw working people out of their pensions. Can you tell us about this?
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same thing over again. I mean, there's this war, and I know that word's thrown around maybe a little too much in politics, but this is a really concerted effort by, again, the far right, and the far right drives this party, the Tea Party, the Freedom Caucus in the House, the billionaire contributors, and again, it's billionaires. It's not just the old, you know, your father's millionaire or decamillionaires. It really is the richest of all, and there's been an attack on workers. So you saw what recently happened at Chipotle. When Chipotle gave a raise to their generally pretty low income workers, and the stock market punished them, the same in American Airlines. So there is this effort to go after wages. Well, there's this effort now with pensions, and our legislation, which Democrats have coalesced around, we're working to get a handful of Republicans on board, will restore for Teamsters, for mine workers, the pensions that they've earned, and they've, you know, they've worked 30. You know this. People don't think about this much. You certainly know it, Tom, that workers at the bargaining table give up future wages. I mean, give up present wages to have future pension and to have health care. So you're at the bargaining table and you say, well, we would, rather than having this $2 an hour raise, we'll put it in the pension fund and our employer will match it. And they go that way. And now that commitment, that promise is being broken.
My understanding, Senator, is that prior to the Reagan era, that corporations that controlled pension funds had to book those pensions as liabilities on their balance sheet, money that they owed their employees at some point in the future. And that I don't honestly know if it was a legislative fix or an administrative fix, but during the 80s, that got flipped so that corporations could book their pensions as assets rather than liabilities. And that's when some of these giant predators, you know, Carl Icahn with TWA, and we saw it with Eastern, we saw it with American, airline after airline, and that was just one industry. I mean, this was right across the board, all industries. Suddenly, they became great takeover targets because they had all this money sitting in their pension funds. And if you took over the company, drained the pension fund, and then bankrupted the company, there was no consequence to you because that money was now an asset instead of a liability. And I mean, it used to be that our pensions were protected. Can we get back to that?
Well, that's the goal. The other thing that's happened because of that threat of the, you know, the vultures, if you will, more and more companies, not just because of that, because it saved the money, shedded the defined pension benefit and instead have a 401k where the company may look pretty generous because it matches a 401k up to 5%. That's fairly typical. Sometimes they match a dollar for every two you put in, but whatever it is, it almost never reaches nearly the security or the value of a defined pension benefit. So you're just seeing it's pretty rare to have a defined pension benefit, meaning defined benefit, meaning when you retire, you're guaranteed X number of dollars per month. A defined contribution is you put money in, and there's no guarantee how much there will be for you in the end. And one of the tragedies of 10 years ago, about which most Republicans in the Senate have collective amnesia, just seem to forget what happened. But 10 years ago, a whole lot of people, because of Wall Street overreach and greed, people lost not just their jobs, but their homes and much of the value of their holdings, whether it was 401k or what was in these pension funds for the Teamsters, the Central States funds and all that. So, but you're right, the companies, once they shifted that way, there's been this continued war on the defined pension benefit. And perhaps, I guess you could call it brilliant by those companies that did that. But ultimately, you saw then all these pensions dumped into the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is a really important entity that companies pay into, but they simply don't have the money to pay to make up for the loss in pensions that so many of these funds have.
So what specifically is it that needs to be done in Congress? If people want to be citizen activists and call their members of the House or Senate and say, please do something about this, what specifically should they say with regard to this whole pension issue?
It's a pension bill that Richie Neal from Massachusetts House member and I have introduced. We're working to get, we think we're going to have Republican support for it at the end, enough to convince McConnell and Ryan to support it. Our bill is S-2147, and it will restore the pension I won't go into great detail, but to restore the pension for literally hundreds of thousands of workers, hundreds of thousands of people who paid in 30 and 40 years. It's about 1.5 million total workers, and if you're particularly Teamsters, mine workers, carpenters, workers in bakers workers, a whole bunch of workers, and that have had these funds. Anyway, they could coalesce around S-2147. Brown Neal is the bill, and we hope to get it in the end of the year deal. It's one of the and the Dreamers are the two top Democratic priorities before we adjourn at the end of the year.
Pensions and the Dreamers. That makes perfect sense.
And these are really fundamentally, as you know, Tom, these are moral issues. I mean, with the Dreamers, these are kids that are they're doing exactly what I want. They're in the military. They're serving our country. They're working full time. They're in school. They have the work ethic overwhelmingly that immigrants have. Young immigrants in this country have done so much to contribute to the country. And why would we do what this president, just the mean-spiritedness of that towards the dreamers? And why would we take these pensions that older workers have earned?
Yeah, it's all pretty breathtaking. And apparently the answer, we just have 20 seconds here, is that they're taking it because they can.
Yeah. Well, that's what they did in the Reagan years. They took it because they can. And it undercut the economic security of so many. And this is worse because of the stagnation of wages overall. So people just can't build a nest egg for the future without some assistance.
Which this tax bill is not going to help.
This tax bill does the reverse of it. Absolutely.
Wow. Amazing. Senator Sherrod Brown, Senator, you are doing such great work. We're so grateful that you're in the Senate and that you would come on our program and say hi.
Of course. We will
spread the word far and wide. Senator Sherrod Brown. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tom. Thank
great,
you,
great talking with you. And brown.senate.gov is his website, and you can tweet him at Sen Sherrod Brown. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Today is the big day for net neutrality. We'll continue that conversation after this, too. Welcome back. Ajit Pai will lose, Evan Greer writing today from fightforthefuture.org. Today, the FCC is expected to vote to gut net neutrality, but Battle for the Net, Team Internet, and Demand Progress, Fight for the Future, the Free Press Action Fund, they're announcing a massive internet-wide campaign to demand that our elected officials in Congress use what's called a resolution of disapproval under the Congressional Review Act. Now, the Congressional Review Act was put into place by Congress, by Republicans in Congress specifically, to make it possible for Congress to overturn excessive regulations, as it were, from executive branch agencies. So if the EPA, if the EPA has given a broad mandate, for example, you can deal with pollution. So the EPA decides, well, we're going to decide that carbon dioxide is part of pollution. Hadn't been part of the law, but the EPA gets to make the rules because that's what the law says. The EPA makes the rules. So the EPA makes that rule. At that point, Congress could, under the Congressional Oversight Law, Congress could come in, the Congressional Review Act, the CRA, Congress could come in and say, no, we didn't really mean carbon dioxide. We were just talking about soot. And they can actually change the rules that have been put into place by regulatory agencies. So one of those regulatory agencies is the FCC. And the FCC is fixing, presumably today, to vote to gut net neutrality protections. And if not today, someday soon. Ajit Pai, former Verizon lawyer, is the head of the FCC. There's three men who are Republicans on the FCC and two women who are Democrats. The two women who are Democrats are saying we need a free and open internet. The three men who are Republicans are saying we need to turn the internet over to a half a dozen giant corporations so that they can make huge profits that they will recycle back to the Republican Party. I got an email from via the Sanders Institute from Robert Reich. And Robert Reich says, you know, if and when this happens, it's going to, number one, drive up prices for internet service. He says broadband providers can charge customers higher rates to access certain sites, or raise rates for internet companies to reach consumers at faster speeds. Either way, those price hikes get passed along to you. Number two, it'll give corporate executives, this would be in the internet service business, free rein to slow down and censor news or websites that don't match their political agenda, or give preference to their own content for any reason or for any reason at all. And number three, it'll stifle innovation. Cable companies could severely hurt their competitors by blocking specific apps or online services, and small businesses who can't afford to pay higher rates could be squeezed out altogether. But if Congress passes a resolution of disapproval under the Congressional Review Act, they can force the FCC or basically override the FCC's decision on net neutrality. This would be a first step. Then the second step would be to actually pass a law saying that the internet in the United States is considered a public utility and is regulated under Title II of the Telecommunications Act, which is what Tom Wheeler put into place back in 2015 and is basically how the internet had been operating right up until 2015. But now you've got these big multi-billion dollar corporations that are coming in and saying, no, we want our piece of this. It's pretty incredible. McWayne in Chino Valley, Arizona. Hey, McWayne, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. You know, it occurs to me these fires in California are an evident demonstration of the corruption of the Republican cult. While men and women are risking their lives to save multi-million dollar estates, in particular in Bel Air, at the same time, the Republican tax scam is through various scurrious means of pocket picking are taking money from these firefighters and giving it to the owners of these multi-million dollar estates.
It's true.
As well denying climate catastrophe, which is the catalyst for these fires. It's barbaric.
Yeah. I think that that's a very, very good description, and you're absolutely right. This tax bill. I don't know if you've seen the Tom the Dancing Bug cartoon today, but you can find it all over the net. I saw it over at Daily Kos, and the little bill. You know, I'm just a bill, right? The wrapped up piece of paper, animated piece of paper. He says, "Okay, let's go off and be a bill. We'll be the tax bill." And these two lobbyists throw him in the backseat of a limousine and say, rip out the future tax cuts for the middle class. And they rip a piece off of him. And he goes, ah! And then they say, tear out education deductions. And, ah! Stuff in tax breaks for wineries, golf courses, private jets. Rip out health care. Write in a clause defining a fetus as a person. Make Cory Gardner happy. And then, you know, the bill is like just trashed at that point. So, but that's what's going on.
Yeah, their governance seems to be equal parts barbarity and predatory. They, at the behest of their masters, are literally preying upon those they see as unworthy and disposable.
It's all about doing the bidding of the morbidly rich. That's what's going on, and that the morbidly rich are driving some really, really, truly dangerous policies in this country. McWayne, thanks for the call. Very well said. We'll be back. Julio Rivera is going to drop by. We'll have a short discussion and then pick up your phone calls right after this. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Back with more of your calls and Julio right after this. Everybody's talking about superfoods, those nutritionally dense foods that are especially beneficial to your health. Did you know that one of the most powerful superfoods you can put into your body is beets? They're loaded with an important nutrient that increases your blood flow, which increases your energy. But who wants to eat a pile of beets every day? Not me. But now you can get the energy benefits of beets in a powerful, concentrated superfood drink, Superbeets. Only Superbeets is made from beets grown to exacting standards, then concentrated into superfood crystals. Superbeets promotes the body's own natural ability to produce healthier circulation for increased energy and stamina all day long. So if you want the benefits of a powerful superfood, call 800-568-9889 or go to tomsbeets.com. With your first order, get another 30-day supply of Superbeets for free, plus indicator strips to see how Superbeets is working for you, and free shipping. So call 800-568-9889 or go to tomsbeets.com today. That's 800-568-9889, tomsbeets.com on the interwebs. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, we've got a couple of pieces of legislation here that the Republicans are pushing. Well, one's a piece of legislation, the other's an administrative action by the FCC. The first is the tax bill, which rips out health care for 13 million Americans, stuffs in huge tax breaks for wineries, golf courses. Gee, who do we know who owns a bunch of golf courses? And private jets. Gee, who do we know who owns private jet? It tears out education deductions. In fact, it raises taxes on anybody who wants to be, you know, be a graduate student. And the tax cuts for the middle class that everybody, you know, that the Republicans are all talking about expire after 10 years. So the tax cuts for rich people are permanent. The tax cuts for corporations permanent. Tax cuts for human beings, you know, who are not in the, who are in the 99% temporary. So you would think that Republicans would be upset about that, number one. And number two, the FCC is about to take an action that will allow Comcast to say that, you know, Newsmax, Reactionary Times, we don't like the politics of those sites, so we're going to slow down your access to them. We might even block them. Or, hey, you know, let's make some money off our right-wing users and say, if you want to see Julio Rivera's column or his rants on TV, you're going to have to pay extra. That's part of the extra $5 right-wing plan. On the line with us, Julio Rivera, the editorial director of Reactionary Times, columnist for Newsmax, right-wing news and politichicks. ReactionaryTimes.com is the website. You can tweet him at, oh, yeah, it's Julio. Hey, Julio, welcome back.
Well, I just have a question, Tom. Am I getting any of that $5?
$5. What am I missing?
No, no, you just said that if you want to hear my rants, you got to pay an extra $5. So am I somehow... Oh.
Yeah, if you think Comcast is going to share that money with you, I've got a bridge to sell you, Julio.
Yeah, no, this is what I think. And as far as the net neutrality issue, we know for a fact, and this is something that we've discussed before. We discussed it with our pal Charlie Sauer as well. The actual regulations and the way that it was written has been an impediment to the growth of smaller internet service providers in the middle of the country. That's a big problem, and that's what's going to cause ultimately a monopolization of only these large internet service providers are going to be the only game in town because the smaller guys haven't been able to operate. The points that you're making as far as giving preference to certain sites over other sites, those are fair points. And that is a part of the entire concept of net neutrality, or kind of really what it is in essence. But that's not what this legislation has actually done, Tom.
What legislation? You're talking Title II?
Net neutrality rules.
You're talking the FCC?
In 2015.
Right, okay, that was not legislation.
We had net neutrality, and what we're going to do is we're going to get rid of it now. No, in 2015, the FCC, there were new rules that were put in that it wasn't done by Congress. The American people had nothing to do with it, and that net neutrality came into effect in 2015. That's what Ajit Pai, and he's always railed against it, even when he was an attorney for, there was an advocacy group for smaller ISPs that have always been opposed to net neutrality, and he actually, there's quotes on the internet, you can go out and look them up as far as why he took that position.
Julio, this is the same kind of BS that I hear Republicans using trying to sell tax cuts.
Competition, like most government regulation does.
Julio, this is the same BS that I hear Republicans using trying to sell tax cuts. It's all about small businesses. Small ISPs are big defenders of net neutrality. I know two, actually, one here in Portland.
They absolutely are not.
They're extremely outspoken.
Which groups are you referring
to? And the only reason that smaller ISPs are even hanging on is because there are a few areas in this country where there's still, you know, some diversity in what you can bring into your home. But the reality is more than 50% of American households only have access to one internet service provider unless they go out and buy some sort of Wi-Fi or, excuse me, some sort of 3G or LTE hotspot that then they get to have a second source that's another one of the big five carriers. We were operating under Title II for the internet right up until the late 90s, the early 2000s, because most people accessed the internet through dial-up, which put it over a telephone line, which automatically put it under Title II. That's why there was no discussion about net neutrality or not net neutrality, because the net was neutral by law as long as we were using telephones for ISPs. The assumption was across the industry that as we move to getting it out of our cable systems, and they're also regulated to a less vigorous extent, but they're also regulated as utilities to an extent, that would extend. And, you know, now they're trying to change the rules of the game. And I think it's just absolutely wrong. I don't understand why you would be defending the interests of Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T, Julio. I thought you stood up for the little guy.
Well, see, you're getting it wrong. Again, the end result, and we, like I said, we've discussed this before, $5 billion in new infrastructure spending to improve the services in the middle of the country has been lost. I mean, this money, it's not like these businessmen sit around and say, you know what, let's try to make you know, this 2015 passage of this supposed net neutrality under Barack Obama look bad. We're going to lose money, but let's fight Barack Obama. That's not the way businesses work. You know, the end result is that that money's been lost. That could have been new jobs. It could have been better level of service in the middle of the country.
That's nonsense.
Like, look, I'm in the outskirts of New York, you know, kind of in West New Jersey here. My upload speed is only 12 megabits, and I'm not that far from New York City. It's terrible because I'm in a rural area.
Right, you're making my point.
I could have a
You're making my point, Julio. You know, back in the 1930s, the electric companies refused to bring electricity into rural areas. You know what the government did? Mm-hmm. We created the Rural Electrification Administration, the REA. Franklin Roosevelt created it and said, okay, if the for-profit corporations aren't going to bring, you know, high-quality electricity out to rural areas, we the taxpayers will. And we did. Mm-hmm. And then in the 1950s, as it became more and more obvious that in order to have a telephone, the telephone was a safety device, you know, dial 911, call the fire department, call, you know, an emergency. And again, the telephone companies refused to run their lines out to rural areas because it wasn't profitable. We had the Rural Telephony Administration under the Eisenhower administration, the RTA, and we, the taxpayers, paid for that. And in both cases, the for-profit companies came in behind us and said, oh, now that you've paid for the infrastructure, we'll pick this up and profit off it, which is a whole nother argument. But really, I mean, look at what Chattanooga did, Julio. If you live in Chattanooga, Tennessee right now, you've got the highest speed, lowest priced internet in the United States. 100 MIPS up, 100 MIPS down. And I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And super low prices, 30, 40 bucks a month at the most. And why? Because the city decided to put it in without the overhead of Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, all their executives, their multimillionaire and billionaire owners and stockholders and all this other stuff. And it's just for the people. Why don't we do that nationally? Why don't you call for
public broadband? The government to fully take over the internet, which I don't agree with either. But listen,
that's not a takeover. It's providing.
I think what we could do as far as to ensure that there aren't internet service providers and nobody's trying to stifle anyone under, you know, in a malicious way. If there were certain rewrites
of
the Communications Decency Act requiring, you know, any slowing down of a website or anything, or the prevention of certain, you know, material not going from, you know, or not being broadcast on the internet, you know, requires a good faith requirement. There's other ways to go around it without.
Yeah, the other ways to go around it involve hundreds.
There's not really legislation. It wasn't passed through Congress, but whatever these rules that were put into place by, you know, privately by the, or publicly by the FCC, but it wasn't done.
Julio, just for the record, just
had nothing,
you know,
to do with the process.
Just for the record, for people who
just returned back to where we were before 2015.
Yeah, I got it. Just for the record, for people who might be confused, the Telecommunications Act, both of 1996 and going all the way back to the 1920s, contained a part called Title II, which says that telephone companies regulated under Title II are considered utilities and therefore cannot be specifically exploited for the profit of a particular actor. They have to be for the good of the people. And
I understand, but the internet is not a utility, Tom.
Yes,
that's
it is.
Problem.
Yes, it
it's
is.
Entertainment. It's not a necessity for life. It's not heat. It's
that's
not
that's
water.
The argument
it's
that the phone companies made back in the day, back in the 30s. The phone companies said, no, we're just here for fun. We're here so that you can have a nice talk with your grandma or your girlfriend. And you know, we, the people, didn't buy
it. Call the police with a smoke signal. You know what I mean? It's a different telecommunications, in a sense, is a little bit different as far as the telephone aspect of it. But internet itself, at its pure.
Okay, so if you want. So okay, just to nail this down. You're fine being under the thumb of the big internet companies.
Is carried through internet lines, then maybe we can open up that discussion again.
Okay. We're starting to talk in circles. The tax, we have 1 minute left, Julio.
Okay.
Are you supporting this?
I don't like the tax plan for individuals. I'll be honest with you. I think that what Trump initially proposed, which was, you know, 12% up to 80,000, 25% up to about 400,000, and then 33% over 400,000. That was good for the individuals. I think that was a big part of what got them elected. Unfortunately, the message didn't make it to the legislators in Congress who wrote this horrible tax plan, which in a sense really only really helps big business, but big business will help the little guy by producing more jobs. So one way or the other, it is going to be better than what we had, but it certainly isn't as good as it could have been.
You know, GE's stock just went up right after they laid off, what, 5,000 people last week? 12,000 people. Mm-hmm. They laid off 12,000 people. Their stock went up. How is it the big business creates jobs?
Mm-hmm. Well, they do if they're in a climate which is less regulated.
So that they can move their jobs overseas, you mean?
To go ahead and grow their business because they're going to keep more of their money. That's basic, Tom. I mean, you can go out and cherry pick one or two examples and, you know, try to throw a curveball. But
please,
the fact of the matter is,
Julio, you cannot name a company that created jobs because they got a tax cut. I defy you to. If there was such a thing as a company that created jobs because they got a tax cut, every conservative in America would be going, you know, AT&T, 1984. Right? It didn't happen. Julio Rivera. Hang on just a second, Julio.
Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
ReactionaryTimes.com. Oh, yeah, it's Julio is the Twitter handle. Julio, thanks for being with us.
Thank you as always, Tom. Have a great Christmas.
Thanks, you too. Merry Christmas.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And right now, a couple of rather shocking headlines. These are both from The Guardian. One, the world's richest 0.1% have boosted their wealth by as much as the poorest half of the world's citizens. And the other, almost 100 million people a year forced to choose between food and health care. Meanwhile, this bizarre tax bill that is working its way through Congress or through the House-Senate reconciliation process is pretty extraordinary. Let's check in with Professor Richard Wolff, an actual real economist, the co-founder of Democracy at Work. His most recent book, Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, Essays on the Global Economic Meltdown. His websites, democracyatwork.info and rdwolff with two Fs .com. You can tweet him at Prof. Wolff, as in Professor Wolff, P-R-O-F-W-O-L-F-F, or at democracy at W-R-K. Professor Wolff, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom. I'm really glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. First of all, your thoughts on these headlines, these articles from The Guardian. Inequality report shows the UK's richest 50,000 people have seen their shares of the country's wealth double since 1984. What is going on and why is it worldwide when mostly the U.S. and the U.K. had Reagan and Thatcher? Did the whole world adopt Reaganomics?
Well, in a way, yes. And the reason is really pretty simple to see, that the people in the United States and Britain who stood to gain, as you yourself have pointed out, over the last 35 years, from rising productivity that they didn't have to share with the mass of the rest of the people in a rising ability for them to enjoy a higher standard of living, and they have to take it all themselves, and the United States then becomes the most unequal society in the world. One of the things that does is create an enormous incentive for the people who run the corporations in Europe and Asia and Africa and Latin America to want to emulate that, to try to undo the social welfare systems they have in their countries, to try to change the pattern in order to keep up, in a sense, with the Joneses here in the United States and in England. And so, yes, it has spread all over the world, depending on how much resistance the people in each country put up to that. The inequality, though, is the real key to this story, that we have now been living for an entire generation in an economic system that is unbelievably successful in making the rich richer and everybody else either poorer or stagnant in their situation, to substitute wages by putting everybody in a huge personal debt. For your credit card, your home, your car, and now even in many parts of the world for your kids' education. This is if anything was an indictment of an economic system not working for the mass majority of the people, this inequality report by Thomas Piketty and his associates is the evidence, the smoking gun, whatever you want to call it, that this is a system that we ought to be debating and criticizing rather than pretending that it is the normal that we all have to accept.
And yet the Trump administration and the Republicans in Congress want to double down on trickle down. You've got Stephen Moore out there quoting a relatively obscure speech that Jack Kennedy gave to the Economic Club of, I think it was New York, in 63. Kennedy at that point seems to have drunk the Kool-Aid. In 1960 in the debate, he said he wanted to close loopholes, to increase revenues, to spend more on education, more on housing. I've played that clip a million times. But they're doubling down on this. What will be the result of that?
Well, you know, here's the thing that mystifies so many of us. And when I say us, I don't mean just one side of the political spectrum among economists. I talk to right-wing economists, center economists, left-wing economists, and I'm struck, as they are, by the following agreement amongst us. We do not agree on how we got into this mess, and we do not agree on how to get out of it. But we do agree that the conditions of the American economy are unspeakably bad, and they have gotten worse over the last 30 years. And this tax law will make, you know, the rich richer and the rest of us poorer. Instead of reacting and correcting for what's been going on, it continues. It leaves you with the impression of a system so skewed to the rich that it's spinning out of control. It is folks who have already more than they know what to do with insisting on doing more, so they have even still more in a kind of lunacy that makes you think of the Midas Touch or other stories like that, when people literally destroy themselves because there's no counterbalancing in the society. Okay. I mean, look at the centerpiece of this tax bill. To cut corporate profits from 35% as their official rate down to 20 to 22.
Corporate taxes.
That's an almost 50% cut in corporate taxes. At the end of a period of time when corporations are richer and more profitable than they've ever been, when they have gained more of the society's wealth over the last 30 years than at any comparable time in our history, why in the world would you do more of that?
Isn't this a classic example of overreach? I mean, they've got everything, and so they're grabbing everything else. You know, they've got all the cookies. Now they're going after the crumbs kind of thing, number one. And number two, we have, you mentioned, this is the, you know, this has been going on for a whole generation, and the consequential generation, the generation that's been on the receiving end of Reaganomics, essentially, and I think we should call that out, because that's really where, in my opinion, that's where a lot of this began. I get it, Jimmy Carter, you know, the last 2 years he was deregulating things, he was starting to drink the Kool-Aid, but really this was Reaganomics. Is the millennials? The millennials are totally whacked. I mean, you know, they're in debt. They're postponing having kids. They're postponing getting married. They're postponing buying houses. And a lot of them are sitting around going, "Oh, the boomers did this to us." It wasn't the boomers. It was the billionaires. Your
Absolutely.
Thoughts?
Absolutely. And you know, I wonder, and I worry to myself as an American, we are now becoming an outlier, not only in inequality, but in the predictable consequences of inequality. For example, creating one obstacle after another for our young people to get the skill and the training that college and universities and graduate programs produce. You know, the colleges and universities are where you create the quality and the quantity of skilled labor. And every economist I know of all persuasions is convinced that the future of the American economy in a world system requires us to have good quality and good quantity of trained people. But we now put that whole generation into debt if they're going to get this degree. We are now in this new tax bill about to make graduate students pay taxes on money they don't even see, the tuition waiver position of the House on this subject. What is it? We're crazy. The Germans and the Finns, for example, in Europe, have gone the opposite direction to make tuition at all schools zero in order not to indebt their young
right.
people.
Plus, they give the students a stipend.
Support it.
Yep.
It's an incredible spectacle of spinning out of control that I think we're all observers of as we watch this bill go through.
Yeah, I think that's so true. In those countries, in Germany and Finland, and many other countries, they'll actually pay students a small stipend to go to college, you know, for their housing and their books.
Absolutely.
And things. So, and
we understand the social benefits and the economic benefits of doing this as being, in the end, good for everybody, including the well-off people. And so they're not into quite the level of evil kind of redistribution of wealth from the bottom and the middle to the top, because they see in the long run, this is literally self-defeating.
Yeah, amen. Professor Richard Wolff, thank you so much for being with us, Richard. Great having you with us today.
Good to talk to you, Tom, and look forward to the next time.
Thank you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You can tweet Professor Wolff at Prof. Richard, at Prof. Wolff. Excuse me, at... Yeah, and Prof. Wolff. There you go.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and quite the day. I think it's worth revisiting. This is from the day before yesterday, the USA Today editorial board. But things seem to move so fast, right? It's like every day there's a new outrage. Every day it's like Donald Trump said what? He tweeted what? He did what? You know, it's like, really? Ajit Pai just blew up the internet. You've got, you know, the tax bill is coming out of conference committee, but the president, Donald Trump, when he went after Kirsten Gillibrand, it was for the newspaper USA Today. This is Gannett. This is a conservative corporation. It was for this newspaper a bridge too far, and they wrote an op-ed. This is in the Voice of the Editorial Board of USA Today, saying, with his latest tweet clearly implying that a United States senator would trade sexual favors for his campaign cash, President Trump has shown he is not fit for office. They talk about how Obama and Bush both broke promises and told untruths, but the basic decency of each man was never in doubt. In fact, there's a piece in, I think it's the Times, that, no, maybe the Washington Post, one or the other, about how often Donald Trump lies versus all the, quote, lies of Barack Obama. And they actually chronicle, I think, 8 times that Obama did not tell the truth. And they were fairly innocuous things. I mean, it was just literally getting stuff wrong that he later corrected. Whereas Trump is like literally lying every day. They went on to say, a president who'd all but call a senator a whore is unfit to clean toilets in Obama's presidential library or to shine George W. Bush's shoes. And so much the case. By the way, we had our poll on YouTube mobile community yesterday. Our poll was, the end of net neutrality could see your ISP charging you extra for Netflix and Amazon Prime for the ISP's profit, or slow you down so much you won't be able to watch. And 2% of people say, that's fine, I'll pay for the lack of net neutrality. 1% said, never heard of net neutrality. 97%, or 90, close to 98%, said, no way, net neutrality must stay in place. This was our poll. Matthew Upchurch posted a comment on our feed. He said, the internet is the modern means of production. This is a bourgeois attempt to control them. Melanie DeLong said, it should be a public utility, not controlled by a corporation. C.J. Johnson said, information and knowledge shouldn't be only for the wealthy. Anthony Kirkwood said, just another way to take money out of our pockets. When is enough enough? Excellent points all. When is enough enough? It's remarkable. Timothy in Portland, Oregon, listening on X-Ray FM. Hey, Timothy, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good. What's up?
Good. So I just wanted to respond to one of your last callers. Said he was living in West Seattle, and he has slow internet. I'm a fiber optic splicer. I've dealt considerably with CenturyLink and have installed a great deal of the network there in Seattle. So I know that's totally untrue. But that's not the main.
I believe he was in a West Seattle suburb, and he was complaining that he can only get DSL.
Okay. That makes more sense. They are trying to push out fiber to the suburbs more and more. Okay. A slow process. But anyway, that's not the meat of why I wanted to call you today. I'm currently contracting for splicing for Comcast, and I spoke with a salesman, a Comcast salesman, and we had a good hour and a half argument about net neutrality, and I asked him where he was getting his information, and basically, believe it or not, his higher-ups. So they're basically training these people to speak ill of net neutrality to customers if that is ever to be brought up.
Right.
And I just thought that was really interesting. Any time anyone has ever brought that up to me, I tell them the facts, you know, not what the corporation wants them to hear.
Right. And as a guy who's a splicer, splitter, whatever the title was, you mentioned, Timothy, of fiber cable for internet service providers. What, in your opinion, in very short form, please, are the facts regarding net neutrality?
Well, it's the destruction of our internet as we know it today. And it's never going to be the same, and it's going to be really difficult for Democrats, if whenever they come back into office, to retract this.
Yeah.
This,
did you see what Jay Inslee did today?
What's that?
Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington State, rolled out an initiative today that he's trying to get through the legislature that would basically force net neutrality in Washington State.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, when the federal government fails, then the states pick it up. But then we end up with a situation like we have where the old Confederacy states, because their states don't tend to provide services to their citizens. And this, the example I'm thinking of is healthcare, for example. You know, they cut back eligibility for Medicaid. And as a consequence of that, if you live in the red states, you're surrounded by worse poverty, more grinding poverty, people more likely to be sick. It'll be the same thing with the internet. In the red states, they will allow the death of net neutrality. In fact, they'll celebrate it, which means that their citizens are going to get charged higher prices for the internet, and they're going to have access to fewer sites. Maybe they'll have free access to Fox News all the time, but that'll be it or whatever. And whereas people in blue states, in states like Washington State, where you've got a forward-thinking governor like Jay Inslee, who says, enough already, we're not going to subject our citizens to this insanity, they're going to end up with an improved quality of life. I mean, the stratification, the gentrification, essentially, of the United States on a state-by-state level, that is the comparison of what's the status of, what's the quality of life in California, Oregon, Washington State, compared to Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas. I mean, it's just going to continue to get worse and worse, and this is another dimension of it.
Yeah, sad. And I've often wondered why cities don't emulate,
Chattanooga
internet.
Yeah.
Into their own infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, Chattanooga did, and it's an incredible success story there. And
well, there's a city in Washington that also does it. Issaquah.
Mm-hmm.
I've done some splicing there, and it's called Rainier Connect, and it's great. People love it.
Hmm. And it's so Issaquah is a town in Washington State.
Yeah.
And they've set up their own city-run broadband internet service.
Yeah, in their small suburb area. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And people are getting high speeds at low prices.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, this is not rocket science. If you conventional wisdom 50 years ago was, if you want your community to prosper, you want to have an off ramp from the highway if it goes by your town. You know, if you want your community to prosper, you better have good roads without potholes, because, you know, business doesn't want to come to town that has lousy infrastructure. The infrastructure of 2017 is the internet. And and as, you know, more and more communities start getting whacked by these big internet service providers, you know, carving up their fiefdoms and jacking up their prices, we're going to see the further split, the further increase in high quality life, low quality life in the United States between red and blue states. It's not a good thing. Timothy, thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing your experiences with us. Great to hear from you. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this. When was the last time you looked forward to sitting at your desk all day? Since getting my new X chair, not only am I enjoying the time spent in my desk much more than ever, but I can't believe how much more productive I'm being. My X chair is unbelievably stylish, and thanks to all the ways that you can personalize it, it literally molds itself to my body. Trust me, this is not your grandfather's office chair. And because I don't need to keep having to take breaks or to stretch my back, I'm getting more done in a day than ever before. If you spend a lot of time in your office chair every day, then you need to try the X chair. In fact, here's a terrific deal just for my listeners. The makers of X chair want you to feel the X chair difference for yourself. So if you go to xchairtom.com, that's the letter X chair, T-H-O-M.com, not only will they knock $100 off the price, but they'll even throw in a free footrest if you use the promo code Tom. Just go to xchairtom.com now. I love my X chair, and you will too. So check out xchairtom. That's xchairtom.com. Check out xchairtom.com, and be sure to use THOM as the promo code for your $100 discount. And welcome back. Patrick, watching Free Speech TV. I don't have a city for you, Patrick. Where are you calling from?
I'm in Seaside, California.
Oh, great.
From Mabe Russell country.
Yep.
I got a bunch of things I want to cover. I'm going to go fast. My questions that I wanted to ask at the end concern Dish Network, net neutrality, and donating to Free Speech TV. I did my one-man band little demonstration at Del Monte Shopping Center in Monterey on last Thursday. I had two double-sided signs. One read, Verizon has spent millions, I wrote the S as a dollar sign, to make our free and open internet as closed and restricted as China, Libya, Egypt, Iran, Turkey, Russia, and Saudi Arabia. Another sign said, Verizon, AT&T, and Comcast have spent $600 million since 2008 to take away your free and open internet. The flip sides of those signs said, killing net neutrality is the Trumpian road to tyranny. And the other flip side said, if we lose net neutrality, Steve Bannon controls our internet news reality. My questions were about Dish Network, net neutrality, and also how to donate to Free Speech TV. I'm under the understanding that DirecTV is owned by AT&T. As far as I know, Dish and DirecTV are the only cable providers that carry Wink TV, Free Speech TV, and Al Jazeera America. But since DirecTV is owned by AT&T, I'm wondering how long that's going to last. I'm with Dish and very happy. That's my first question.
Let me answer them as you ask them, okay? And I'll come back to you, Patrick.
My second question basically is, will we be able to maybe have more leeway as far as going to the library than our own phones or computers? And, you know, Redshift is a local internet provider. I'm wondering if they're going to be able to get around this. My question about donating to Free Speech TV. I don't have the funds today. I plan to donate tomorrow at least $360. I wanted to know, is it possible to do that package? But if I want to do the $1,000 lunch in Portland later, can I call Free Speech TV again when they're not having a pledge drive in, say, a few weeks and pledge again for the $1,000 lunch? Or do they break it up into 12-month segments?
I don't know the answer to that question. I would suggest you call them and ask them. With regard to, what was your first question again?
Well, it was, you know, I guess you already addressed Dish TV as far as...
Oh, yeah, I have no idea.
Is DirecTV going to stop carrying Link and Free Speech?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if that happened. To the best of my knowledge, the Free Speech TV carriage on both Direct and Dish are on the channels that These are, by the way, they're not cable providers, they're satellite providers, that the satellite providers are required to carry a certain amount of nonprofit content in exchange for, you know, using the airwaves, you know, over our country and the sky and whatnot.
I was shocked that our local librarians, the Seaside Library, I mean, I love librarians. I think they are the true Marvel Comics superheroes. And they were all over, you know, the USA Patriot Act. But that was kind of easy because, you know, it was very clear that the Justice Department under Bush wanted the libraries to snitch us out. But I was shocked. None of the librarians at the Seaside Library even knew what net neutrality was, much less that we were about to lose it.
Yikes. Yeah. Well, increasingly, libraries are becoming places where people go to use the Internet. So I have a feeling that they're going to learn all about it. Patrick, thank you for the call and the interesting questions. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Pam in Glen Carbon, Illinois. Hey, Pam, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I'm calling because I was, you know, I'm a Democrat and I believe that, you know, we need to work and get the progressive integrated. The only thing I was going to tell you is I was on the platform committee and we, the Bernie people, did try to get an aspirational amendment towards universal health care and it didn't pass. So it was not really included in the 2016 Democratic.
Thank you for that clarification. I wasn't sure because I know that on the one hand, the Democratic Party wanted to support at least universal access, which would include the idea of Obamacare before the Supreme Court, you know, said individual states could opt out of the Medicaid provisions. So it would have been like, let's go back to a better version of Obamacare. And nobody wanted to diss Obama's signature achievement. On the other hand, you know, they wanted to be, the Democratic Party wanted to be in favor at the leading edge of that movement. And so it sounds like that was the compromise.
Right. I mean, and the nurses, the United Nurses and National mm-hmm. Nurses, I mean, we tried, and I'm a physician and physicians in our national health program, mm-hmm. and we tried to get it on the ballot. But, I mean, there was really more support for fixing Obamacare.
Yeah. Yeah. I get okay. that. And there's internal politics there as well as money at work and whatnot. But thank you for that, Pam. Thanks for the fact check.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
I do appreciate it. It's amazing. We've got the smartest, most active, most engaged listeners in the world. I'm convinced any radio show in the world. Bernie in Ridgefield, Connecticut. Hey, Bernie, what's on your mind today? Hang on just a second. I just managed to unplug my headphones, so I can't hear you. Hang on.
Hi, okay. Can you hear me now?
There you go. Now I can hear you, Bernie. What's up?
Great. You know, Scott Adams, the creator of the Dilbert cartoon strip, who is also an expert at hypnotism, brought up the fact he predicted that Donald Trump was going to win.
And yes.
Part of the tactics that Donald Trump was using that Scott Adams pointed to was his labeling of all of his opponents. Little Marco, you know, crazy
low energy
Hillary,
jab, yeah.
You know, lying Ted, etc. And Donald Trump is a bully. You know, we see that. He's a liar. We know that. We know that the Washington Post PolitiFact has calculated that nearly 70% of what he says is either mostly false, false or pants on fire false. And yet no one has labeled him yet. And I think that just like we had Tricky Dick for Dick Nixon.
Yeah, I call him Don the Con.
Excuse me?
I call him Don the Con.
Yeah, I okay, good for you. I was thinking of discount Don's. You can take 70% off of whatever he says.
Yeah, that's but a good one, too.
We need to label him, and we need to start using it so that, you know, we fight back, not to mention the fact that, you know, I don't think it would be very good for his brand, which would drive him crazy. And,
yeah.
And how do we popularize this? How do we get people to use it so that we're, you know, punching the bully back in the face?
Yeah, I think we just need to start using the language regularly. I'm trying to promote the idea of morbidly rich as a new phrase. Sort of like, you know, when Frank Luntz did the work for the Walton family and reinvented the inheritance tax into the death tax.
Yeah, the death tax. Right.
You know, the power of words is amazing. And, you know, and we are groaning under the weight of the morbidly rich in this country. You know, it's just, and Don the Con would be another one, or Discount Don. The Don, the problem with that is, you know, there's the mafia meaning, but then there's also the sounds like, you know, you're talking about Frank Sinatra or something or whatever. So, but yeah, Bernie, this is what we've got to figure it out. And
yeah,
so,
I mean, if we don't use it, we lose it.
Yeah.
And I think we have to start to fight back and start to label him and utilize it, whether it's Don the Con or whether it's Discount Don.
Yep.
You know, let's do it. Let's use it.
I'm with you. Billy in, I don't have a city for you, Billy. It says you're listening on WCPT, though. I'm assuming in the Chicagoland area.
You got it, brother. Chicago. How you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
First time caller. I watched the documentary last night. I have not been able to sleep since that documentary.
Which documentary?
Trumping Democracy.
Is that the one that Robert Reich did?
You got it. You listen, a big announcement to you, any Democratic strategist, any campaign, person working on any campaign from a Democratic progressive side, you need to watch this documentary. It is extremely important. It shows how Donald Trump used PSYOPs by Cambridge Analytica, which is partly owned by Robert Mercer, which is, he's a genius, whether you like it or not. The man is a genius. They use algorithms to win the election.
Yep.
Don't even bother say anything. Don't even try to do anything. You got to watch this documentary. You'll understand how these people did it, why they did it. It's scary.
Yeah. This is over on Netflix, right, Billy?
You got it. Yes, it is on Netflix. I watched it. I closed my Facebook because a good 80% of it had to deal with how Facebook allows these ads that are target specific people, where this ad basically watches all my digital imprint and everything that I leave on the internet. They watch it, they sell it to these PSYOP companies, and they basically send me an ad that targets me directly. Nobody else can see that ad but myself and everybody else that's listening in. And this ad is not even true, it's fake. And what they do, they use your digital imprint to influence you, to change your mind.
Yep.
Just so you can side with them.
Oh, it's an insanely powerful tool. And Facebook is running around going, we're not the press. You know?
No, they're 100% responsible for this. And if we keep thinking that Donald Trump is a clown and the people that follow him are clowns, well, I got to tell you something. Robert Mercer is the man that wrote the language that Google Translate uses.
Yeah.
So we're dealing with some pretty genius guys here.
No, and his daughter Rebecca is a relentless conservative activist, and with the power of a billionaire daddy, it's amazing.
Yep.
Billy, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. Thank you all for being with us today. Thank you so much for listening to the program. And tomorrow, another day, we'll see where this thing goes. How many lawsuits are filed against Ajit Pai and the FCC? Whether they're going to have success? Where we go with this. But in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us, and that includes you. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.